And welcome to Pilot Season, a podcast where we look at TV pilots, some that fail and some that didn't. This week we're looking at one that eventually failed, but that really wasn't its fault, and it was 3 seasons in. And this week, Alan Byrne, before I introduce you, I'm going to tell you that we are going to see The Wizard.
Are we going to pick up a backbone or some guts or something?
Possibly. My name is Patrick Brogan, and alongside me, as ever, is Alan, editing has given him arm cramps, Byrne.
Hello. Hello. I'm the reason the podcasts keep being late.
Alan's learning to edit, and his...
I have a hurting wrist.
Your arm? We're going to get you some of those, some, like, special gloves for your... for like, the people with RTS use.
Yeah, it doesn't help that my day job also really involves using a mouse.
Who'd have thunk that, you know, the web designer would have problems using a mouse for a very long time? Mm-hmm. See, I edit the podcast when I edit everything on a like touchpad. And
I feel like that'd be worse.
I don't find it too bad, but I'm also a lot more used to editing than you, so I just sort of go. Ooh, that was a big one. Alan's got a new microphone, and he just gave himself a thing to edit out if he edits this one. We'll talk about that afterwards. I don't know what my schedule is like this week. This week, though, Alan.
Yeah.
We watched a show that I'm very fond of, and you're somewhat fond of, I think.
I quite liked it.
It is, of course, the 2004, but took me a second to find there, 2004 teen noir drama series created by screenwriter Rob Thomas, Veronica Mars.
Woo!
Cue Dandy Warhols. To be all like, a long time ago we used to be friends, etc. Veronica Mars is... was a show that ran for 3 seasons. First two on UPN. The final season was on CW. And it was a terrible, 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 terrible thing that happened. And it starred Kristen Bell as Veronica Mars. It included now much more famous than most of the people in the show, Amanda Siegfried as a corpse. She was the she played Lily, Veronica's dead best friend, who was essentially the Laura Palmer of the first season.
Yeah, with far less trippy dream sequences.
Yeah, it also had Enrico Cantileone, who is also known as the camera guy from Just Shoot Me, the photographer from Just Shoot Me. I forget the character's name, and general awesome guy, and no one else I think who's really super famous.
Yeah, those would be the three biggest names out of it.
Yeah, like Percy Daggs. Oh, Percy Daggs the third was her best friend Wallace. Francis Capra, who was Weevil, who comes up in this episode. There's who else? You had people like Chris McCarpenter and Alison Hannigan had reoccurring roles in the first couple of the seasons. In this episode we've got Darren Norris as Cliff, who is the best.
Cliff is great. I love Cliff.
Cliff is wonderful. We're going to get on to Cliff later, but Cliff was... I wanted a Cliff and Keith spin-off at one point because they would have been so... It was just so... fun. We got Harry Hamlin also was in the series as Aaron Eccles, who was an A-list Hollywood actor who was a pivotal person to the plot of the season. I without giving away too much. Oh god, Amanda Siegfried's Wikipedia page is terrifying. I think it's not Wikipedia, it's her entry on the Veronica Mars character list. Her eyes are massive. And I just looked over, and there were these giant eyes looking slightly off camera, and like there's a little bit of flash from the lens, or whatever, and it's just scary. No one else I can really think. Well, later on, like Richard Grieco. Was it Grieco? Steve Guttenberg was in the second season quite a bit. Ed Begley Jr. was in the third season. Ed Begley Jr. was
one of the best things in the third season. You keep saying that, but the season three is the one I started on, and it's not all bad.
Compared to the first and second seasons, particularly I think the second season is, I think, brilliant. Especially as it winds up, it probably has the best season finale of any of the three seasons. The Veronica Mars, what I loved about it, and what is the general construction of the show, is that it has a long-standing arc to each of the 2.5 of the three seasons, and but alongside that you have the general week-to-week thing of Veronica Mars, high school student / private investigator, who's working for her father's private detective company, while being an outcast in her school, because, as you'll find out in this episode, she used to be on the cool kids' table, but then she got rejected by them, and now she's an outcast in a town that has, in direct quote from the show, no middle class. Either you're super rich, or you're lower middle class, kind of poor people. There is no middle ground in Neptune.
Yeah, it's a great premise, the mixing the noir detective story with high school drama. It's something new, which really stands in its favor.
Yeah, it's very noir, very like. It's just shot it is shot really, really well, and really sort of, I think, differently from an awful lot of shows of its ilk.
Yeah, it doesn't have the standard Dawson's Creek type of framing.
There's a great shot later in the episode where Veronica and Keith are talking, and the desk and a lamp are front of frame, and they're in the back of frame. Talking, and there's two lamps either side of it, and it's a really cool little shot, and there's some great shots actually in the office. Some nice overhead shots too in the some of the outdoor stuff. It's really cinematic looking show. Actually.
Which is definitely what you want if you're going for this detective story kind of thing.
Yeah. So let's get into how it opens up. It opens up at the Camelot Motel. So some voiceover of Veronica Mars, who says that he refers to herself as a spinster in the opening couple of seconds of the show, as we're watching the silhouette of it seems to be some sexy times are happening, and some guy walking along a motel outside, and the whole thing and talk of. And talking about divorce settlements and all sorts of stuff that sort of makes you possibly think that, or wants to lead you to believe that we're talking about a much older character than in a much different situation than what we actually get.
Yeah, the whole thing is there to set up your standard detective story.
Yeah.
Although you immediately know it's a little different because it's a female narration.
Yeah.
Which is incredibly rare in detective stories.
And the first shot we get as we pan up to her face is her calculus textbook.
That's the second clue that something is a little different.
Yeah.
It's all very well done.
It's really well done. And then you have Kristen Bell's Veronica Mars, who was... playing, I think, a 16-year-old, and she was about 26 or 7 at this point.
Hollywood casting.
But also, Kristen Bell is tiny. Like, she's a tiny little person.
She would have been 24.
Oh, she's 24. She's younger than I thought.
Bearing in mind, Matt's on the podcast.
Yes.
But this one's easy. She was born in 1980.
She was so tiny. She's so tiny, and she loves slots.
Oh, she loves slots so much.
That's probably what she's better known for now. Is loving slots. And forgetting Sarah Marsh.
And Frozen.
Was she in Frozen?
She was Anna.
Oh, right. I haven't seen Frozen.
Well, you should get on that.
I'm more of a Tangled guy. Like Tangled is great. Tangled is great. Tangled's really great.
Don't go into Frozen expecting it to be as awesome as I think Tumblr's gotten really obsessed with it.
Tumblr does that though.
Yeah. That's what it's for. Obsessions.
Let's park the Disney discussion and the Tumblr Tumblr interlude and go back to Veronica Mars. Because we do gripe about Tumblr a lot in this show. Well, I gripe about Tumblr a lot in this show, mostly.
Surprising considering the amount of time we spend on it.
But also, we're probably about 7 to 10 years older than most of its users.
Damn kids stealing our internets.
God damn them. The PCH bikers appear then Weevil, who is the leader of the gang, and he's all looking at Veronica and like, "You've got car trouble, madam."
I can't take that line seriously ever. Arrested Development has ruined the phrase car trouble.
But Alan, then we get the intro. And it made me so happy to watch the intro again. I have all these on DVD.
Actually, there's another edit of this that doesn't have this opening scene or the intro. It just starts with the next scene.
Yeah, I know the one I watched was the extended version from the...
I'm not entirely sure what else the extended version has.
I feel like it's slightly... I can't remember. I don't remember if I've seen the regular one.
It's not much longer. The extended version's 40 minutes, so they can't have cut too much.
I wonder if... I kind of wonder if some of the later stuff around Shelley Pomeroy's party was slightly cut down, because it gets a bit dark.
Yes.
Although, that's not really beyond Veronica Mars, though, to get a bit dark. I don't remember, because I don't remember if I actually ever saw the TV version of this. I mean, I got into Veronica Mars probably 3 or 4 episodes in. Back in the days when you couldn't really go back on the internet and find everything really well, really easily.
What a horrible time we used to live in.
What a horrible past we had. I had to deal with RTE1 in the afternoons of a summer's afternoon in 2004 or whatever it was, 5 maybe. Watching Veronica Mars because I'd heard about it on the internet. And now we roll into Neptune High. Neptune High, I said it in a weird way. The town without a middle class, where they tie the new guy in the school to a flagpole, especially if he's insulted your biker gang or the biker gang has been insulted.
And then you write snitch on his chest.
Yeah.
Or you try to write snitch on his chest.
Guys use their 2004 phones to take photographs. Just one guy.
Yeah. Does that count as a selfie? Is that the earliest documented incidence of a selfie?
Actually, no. Because self-photography has happened since there's been photography. So, not at all. And the earliest selfie sticks, I think, first appeared in the 30s.
Wow. Okay, so Wallace, as we will later be introduced to him, is currently tied to a pole, and the only person who decides to, you know, help the guy is Veronica, who just happens to be carrying a knife.
Yeah, that's kind of random.
It says a lot about her character, though.
It does, quite a lot. That in fact, she's always sort of wearing, you know, she's always wearing her denim jacket and her hoodie, and her hair's kind of... She has sort of a... kind of, she has a sort of, I don't know, I'm trying to think of the best way to put this. She's like, she has that sort of, not troubled teen look, but sort of rebel-y teen kind of look about the way she presents, the way she kind of dresses and presents herself. She's very, she looks very different to the rest of Neptune High as well.
Mm. She's very counter culture to Neptune High's culture.
Yeah. We don't see very much really of the school beyond what the beyond sort of the rich end of it. In this episode anyway. We also know that Veronica Mars, while she works really hard with her dad, she's a smart cookie.
Yep.
Because she's half asleep and is able to then recite some Alexander Pope and explain it to her teacher, even though it's not in very classroom appropriate language.
The exact wording of her analysis is, "Life's a bitch and then you die."
Hmm. It's Pope's...
An essay on man.
An essay on man, yeah.
And then it's time for random locker searches.
It is, and apparently Veronica knows just when the searches are going to happen before the principal does. We established that Veronica is, well, she's smart. She's kind of a smart ass.
She's resourceful.
She's resourceful. And she's clearly got connections.
Definitely.
But you know bugger all about her at this point other than that. I don't think we don't really get too much flashback yet. Oh, just think it's around now we get some of the flashback stuff.
Yeah, Veronica is sitting having lunch alone and has a flashback to back when she was a popular girl.
Yeah. And this is an interesting way. I think this is I feel like the flashbacks in Veronica Mars are always incredibly well done.
Yeah, they give it a sort of surreal look. They put a sort of blue filter on it.
Yeah, twilighty looking filter.
Yeah. And it's shot differently from the rest of the show. There's a lot of Dutch angles and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's never jarring. It's never inappropriate. And it always has a point. Now, it's obvious that I really, really like the show. But one thing I love about this is that it was always, at its best, incredibly, you know, tightly constructed.
Yeah, and I've gone on this rant before, but that's part of what you have to do in something where you're reliant on mysteries.
Yeah.
You have to have the mystery make sense or people will feel cheated. So the usual advice that mystery writers give is to start with your ending and work backwards so that you can see everything true-ish.
Mm. Yeah.
This episode doesn't really have so much of a mystery as it is setting up an entire season-long arc.
Yeah.
And introducing the players in this.
Yeah.
In this series.
What we have at this point, the flashback in question here is explains how her dad used to be sheriff and she used to date Duncan Kane, and then he ended things. She also notes Logan Eccles, who was the class's obligatory psychotic. Funny enough, she would later go on to be the prime coupling of the show.
Girls love the bad boy.
And Logan got
better.
Yeah, he's a real horrible character in this.
He is an absolute asshole.
But charming. He is actually quite, you know, charming and interesting, but also a complete, you know, butt. Wallace sits with her, and Weevil and Felix from the PCH Bikers, they confront Wallace for not still being tied to the flagpole, but Veronica manages to out trash talk them and send them packing.
Yeah, Veronica is hella sarcastic in all of this.
Yeah. So we have learned quite a lot about Veronica Mars as a character, and it's only maybe, I don't know, 10, 15 minutes in.
Yeah. This is a masterpiece in establishing a character.
It's like it really. You get to learn to know her very quickly, and we find out how Wallace ended up pushing the San Alarma's job because those guys were stealing beer and paid him in a $1 bill, and
Wallace needs at least a 50 to keep quiet.
And he had them. He got the sheriff's department came. This is when he meets Sheriff Lamb, who, a bit like Logan, is a wonderful yet terrible man. Although Sheriff Lamb gets slightly more. In the beginning, as it goes on, you kind of learn to love Lamb a lot more than like Logan. Actually, really, you just love them a bit more than hate them.
Lamb doesn't really get as much redemption, though.
No, but I can't really say much without spoiling. We also get a very brief shot of Officer Sachs. Everyone loves Officer Sachs. With his mustache.
Porn stash.
His one mustache of mustaching. Well, also flashback, then we get another flashback of Veronica thinking about Duncan and her own mother, and walking her dog. The dog, which has a name, which will be revealed in a great way further up the show. But Alan,
yes?
Good news.
What's the good news?
The next scene's got Cliff in it.
Yay!
And also Keith. Keith
is also good.
Let's talk about Darren Norris. How wonderful Darren Norris is.
Darren Norris is fantastic. He comes in and he just immediately steals a scene, and then he disappears again. Darren Norris has a fantastically deep voice.
He does.
It's impressive from a guy of his stature.
Yeah, and he's just so. He's so Darren Norris plays Cliff McCormick. Cliff is like. He's a fairly low, like, bottom of the barrel ambulance chaser type, but he is so. How would you describe Cliff? And
Cliff is he's not a skeevy lawyer, but he can be unscrupulous if it means getting his client off. He's one of the few people in Neptune who still trust the Maris family afterwards, because he knows that Keith and Veronica are good people.
And he comes in with a case for Keith, Veronica's father, and more or less just gives it to Veronica.
Yeah. he subtly dances around Veronica doing investigation work for her dad.
And then he's like,
because she's too young.
Yes. And he's just like, here's that file.
Actually, fans of the Fairly Odd Parents might be interested to know that Darren Norris played three very prominent and very different roles on that.
He did, yes.
He was Cosmo, the fairy godfather, Jürgen von Strangl, the Arnie knockoff, and Timmy's dad, Mr. Turner.
You would never guess.
No, none of those are the voice he uses in Veronica Mars.
None of them at all. He is a very...
He's a talented voice actor.
He's a talented man and a very good actor. Very good, very good, very good comedic actor. You find out that the case involves Loretta Cancun, which is a strip club.
The strip club's called the Seven Fail. Loretta Cancun works there.
Yeah.
And she has a grievance with the owner.
I was thinking that I missed the name of the strip club. I was like, I didn't get it in the notes. So that actually gives us our B plot for the episode. I can hear you typing really loudly, by the way.
Oh. Sorry about that.
We find out that Keith has been in his office with Celeste Kane, who was Duncan's mother. And and her dialogue as she leaves the office is more or less, "I hate you, Keith, but I know you're good at your job. You define stuff." Because as we find out, there's some suspicions she has about her husband.
He's been going off making a lot of late nights in the office.
No sexual appetite. All that kind of stuff.
Sounds like an affair.
All the stuff that we learn in a conversation between Keith and Veronica. Also, Keith Mars.
Keith Mars is the dad everybody should aspire to being if they want to be a dad.
He's such a cool, lame, just genuinely kind of good-hearted guy. He's of course a former sheriff of Neptune, now a private detective, and he says, "Who's your daddy?" to Veronica twice in the episode. I don't think it's a thing he says very often later on in the show after this.
No.
Because it's kind of weird. Also because Veronica says she hates it too.
and also because there's a reference to a subplot in the series.
Yes. Keith. Keith gets bail.
In Texas, and he has to go pick him up before he crosses the border.
He more or less says to Veronica, "Don't go near the Kane case, but if you go near the Kane case, bring backup."
Not if, when.
When.
He knows there's absolutely no chance she won't do this.
And Alan, do you know that Jake Kane is responsible not only for inventing and perfecting internet video streaming? He's responsible for all of the money in Neptune.
Yeah, he made everybody millionaires. Seems like even a decent guy.
Even his secretaries.
In your face, YouTube guys.
I always found the whole video stream thing to be a bit weird. I don't know why.
It was really hot though. YouTube only started in 2003.
Yeah.
So that's true. When this was being made, it was like the newest thing. It was like, oh my god, the videos on the internet.
But I was never really bought fully into it because, like, I kind of felt like that's not true.
Yeah, the bit about making millions off it when YouTube to this day doesn't pull a profit, although YouTube Red might actually start changing that.
Yeah. I felt that was a bit far fetched. A little bit, but it wasn't. Like, you can overlook it.
Mm.
All you need to know is that he's a rich guy,
yeah.
And his daughter,
and he's well liked in the community.
Because he gave basically made everybody like he made half the town really really rich, and he brought forth Amanda Seyfried, Lily,
yeah,
his daughter who was the busy mate of Veronica Mars.
Back in the day. Duncan,
who was the boyf,
yeah,
of Veronica Mars back in the day, until Lily is murdered.
Yep. Her last words to Veronica were that she had some sort of secret, and she was super happy, and then murder,
and then death, and Duncan, and Lily. Because Keith is the sheriff, he's called out on the. To the scene, and Veronica happens to be in the car with him because they were picking up food, and she sees Duncan sitting outside. She just knows what's going on, but she sees Duncan sitting outside the Kane house, sort of looking a bit out of it. She goes up to him to try and talk to him, but he's non-responsive and just kind of rocking back and forth. And next thing you know, she's walking into the pool area where she sees Lily dead, and it's a really. It's not a very graphic death scene, but it's still fairly.
It's a pretty brutal murder, yeah.
Yeah.
They do a great job of selling it. The wound looks pretty nasty.
It's pretty, like, this show, and we'll see it again later on, is very good at when doing those flashbacks. It's very good on getting the right feel and the right visual presentation on how just to get this message across correctly. And it really does it with that. And that's probably the first one. I feel like the one that comes later is more effective.
Yeah.
But this one is a good first hit. If you know what I mean.
Yes.
But as we find out, this is probably the bit where it all starts to go downhill for Veronica.
Yeah, totally, because Keith pinned the murder on Jake Kane. And that ended up ruining his career.
He's voted out of sheriff. A video is leaked of the murder scene, which somehow is what causes people's...
Yeah, because it had to have come from the sheriff's department.
Yeah. And we get the worst Logan scene, because you get sad Logan.
Mm.
He's like, what's the matter with you?
Why is your dad ruining this family?
He's like, why is your dad ruining this family? What's the matter with you? He suddenly becomes like an old Italian guy. An old New York guy. And there's also the point where the Mars family starts to disintegrate as well, because before this, before all of this, Veronica had her two parents, and they lived in a nice house, and her dad was a sheriff. Afterwards, mother was nowhere to be seen, and her dad are living in a slightly less surround. It's like a...
They're living in, like, condo flats.
Yeah, it's a pretty low-rent accommodation. And it's from that point on we get flashbacks for the rest of the episode of how her mother eventually just leaves.
Mm.
Leaving her with nothing but a letter and a music box, which Veronica just promptly throws in the bin.
Mm.
Both of them, I think.
She's pretty pissed off.
Yeah. Her mother becomes a running thing, at least I think this season and some of the next one.
Mm.
And it's at this point. Actually, we also get a drop of Abel Koontz, who is the man with the murders and pinned upon, who was a Kane employee, and
Sheriff Lamb arrests him and makes his name.
At this point, which I think is about maybe 25 minutes in, do we actually get? Probably less than that, because it's a 40-minute episode. Mm. Maybe 15 minutes in. At this point, we get back to where we were at the beginning of the show.
Yes, we've caught up to 20 hours earlier. From 20 hours earlier to 20 hours from then.
This is when we find out what backup means. Which is the name of the dog.
So, it's a pretty great gag.
Yes, it is. And we also meet Veronica's taser for the first time.
Mm. Which comes in handy.
Yes, because she tases Felix. Because he's gets too close to the car, which he is still in.
Yep.
And Weevil is really weaved in and out of this episode as kind of a... Mainly an antagonist, but also he's used almost to show in how she deals with the PCHers.
Mm.
You see how Veronica is able to sort of works people to around her side and work things to her advantage to get stuff that she wants.
Yeah, it shows that she's able to make connections and work out deals with people on a quid pro quo kind of basis.
Yeah, because Weevil makes some innuendos towards Veronica, which as he leaves, we get either there's a murder in this, the slightly darker.
Yeah.
Secondary main. Probably is probably the secondary main defining incident of Veronica's character.
Mm.
Is how she got raped at a party after the whole thing with her dad losing his job, and she goes to a party to try and
to prove that she doesn't really care about being a pariah now.
And
it doesn't go well.
No, she's drugged and wakes up and...
And she's in a bed.
She's in a bed and she finds that her underwear is on the floor. It's all really, like... It's really kind of... If the Lily Kane murder scene is pretty graphic by the show standards, this isn't very graphic, but it's all done very...
It sells a lot, and Kristen Bell really sells the emotion of the scene. Pretty much without actually saying anything at the time for a lot of it.
Yeah.
There's a bit of narration over it, but it stops, and it's just all reaction, and it's never... Rape is always a difficult story beat. And I think this is probably the best way to do it. I mean, I'm never comfortable with it, and you shouldn't be.
No.
But the show doesn't just use it as token motivation. It's as well done as you probably could.
It is a really effective scene. Like, I think that the moment, I actually in my head thought it was a bit more graphic than it was. But that's probably,
it's down to the acting and the directing that it is that affecting.
Like the shot of her getting out of the bed and sort of picking up her underwear off the floor, and it's just like tears rolling down her face, and she just sort of saunters slowly out of the house and down the street in her white dress. It
does a lot to tell you how this character went from being one of the popular kids to this bitter and antisocial rebel.
Yeah, because you see later on in the show that the pre-murder Veronica was different. Not hugely different, but different.
She was a lot happier. Yeah. I was going to say that she was more concerned with what people thought of her, but I don't think that's actually the case. It's just that she had a social circle that was and that was nice. It's nice that's having fine. Friends are useful for self-esteem and things.
Self and steam.
Mm.
Where are we here? I've closed some things. Okay. We go back to the school. No, hold on. Oh, we cut back to the Camelot Motel, where she takes some photos of Jake Kane and Mystery Lady. And then we go back to the school, where we have more jerky Logan being a jerk and driving up to Veronica and
offering her a drink because her mom's an alcoholic, and then where's your mommy?
Yeah, and until that point, it had never been established to that point that her mother was an alcoholic. But this is how we learn. By Logan being
an asshole.
I have expositing dick written, which is not the right phrase to use, because, Logan's best friend is Dick. But you don't meet Dick in this episode. those two were great. And Logan then becomes part of Veronica's plan to get the PCH guys away from off Wallace's back. as she approaches Courtney, a stoner guy in his art class or whatever, and gives him a thing to do.
Mm.
And then she downloads her pictures from last night on the fastest Mac ever. Seriously, I don't know. I don't know if any computer works that quickly.
Especially, yeah, especially at the quality that she's printing those out. I mean, it does have to be raw image files, right?
Oh, definitely. And like, you're talking, I don't know what type of camera she's using, but I've had to deal with some raw files from some Canon cameras recently, and CR2 files are bloody huge. And Windows doesn't recognize them. I had to download some codecs to get this thing to work. Tune in next week for more discussion on file on image formats with my new podcast sub podcast.
Tech Talk Inside Pilot Season, hosted by Patrick Brogan.
So Keith comes home and says, "Who's your daddy?" To Veronica, because he's got the money.
He got $2,500
for catching a bail jumper. And then he does that whole thing about how he used to be cool. Okay. He used to be cool. He used to be stacked blondes and
listening to Blue Oyster Cult in my Trans Am.
And then he's like, "Wait, no, that was a Springsteen song. I was never cool."
Keith is wonderfully self-aware.
Yes, he is. And he's also, as opposed to Veronica, he is. Although he would have right to be, you know, downbeat, he's not. He at least externally doesn't let the whole thing get him down.
And part of that's a front.
Obviously, yeah, like, it has to be. Mm. He's a strong.
Yeah.
He's a strong guy. He's strong.
Yeah, he's.
Brilliant
he's
guy.
Putting on a brave face because he doesn't want his daughter to be as mopey as she is.
Yeah.
That's legit. I can get behind that.
Yes, but unfortunately, when they're cooking steaks for dinner,
eating to the middle class to which they aspire.
The lower middle class to which they aspire. The lower is most important there. When they're eating those or cooking those steaks, Veronica gives Keith the pictures, but he looks at them and crumbles the picture and throws it away because he and then he tells Veronica to stay off that case because he's not going to do it. But so something is so we clearly get we get almost exactly what we were talking about there. We get that.
Yeah, twist. Keith there isn't as sunshine and roses as he puts on.
And then we enter phase one of Veronica's plan to save Wallace, which involves the strip club. She's outside the what's it called again?
The Seventh Veil.
The Seventh Veil. I keep forgetting that.
As in Dance of the Seven Veils.
Ah, that's the one.
See? It's a literary reference and a strip club.
You know, doesn't love
it. It's a classy place. It's not the Lady of Pish.
I can get behind a literary reference for your strip club.
If Patrick had a strip club, it would be a literary reference strip club.
Oh yeah, it would totally be a Wasteland reference. You know, that's a given.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can probably think of one if you give me a minute. I can think of a lot of different like sexual scenes in the Wasteland. But I can't think of a turn of phrase that works really well. Anyway, maybe I will by the end of the podcast. But, watch April is the Cruelest Month, a series of videos on the Wasteland by me, which I didn't quite finish, but they're there. Maybe, actually, you know, next year my plans for April are pretty much set in stone.
Yeah, finish that.
No, not this. There's a different thing
entirely. You've got other things happening.
There are other things happening in April this year, Alan.
Ooh. Yeah, I have a feeling I know what that's about.
Foreshadowing. We see the payoff of this whole thing with the the plan for Wallace is that, and it ties back to the thing earlier with the random locker inspections, that Veronica's planted a bong in Logan's locker.
Now, just to emphasize, that's a bong, not a bong.
A B-O-N-G.
Yes.
A bong. As in a thing one would with the, you know, with the...
with the weed.
The marijuana.
Yes.
Smokers would use. And that is actually... Is it... What? I couldn't figure out what they actually set up. Because they said something... They when it's in the police evidence room or whatever, Wallace and Veronica using remote control... because Wallace, by the way, has remote control planes and stuff, so he has remote control stuff. They set off something in the bong to make...
It's some sort of smoke grenade.
Yeah, that's all I could... I couldn't figure out what it was, but like, didn't blow up, but it did.
Yeah, it starts releasing smoke, which sets off the fire alarm in the evidence locker in the sheriff's department.
And Veronica then goes to check with the fire department when she's met by the head of the fire department, who calls her Smokey the Barely Legal.
Yeah, that's creepy.
Yeah. I'm glad that never came back again either. I can see what they were going for with that joke, like with the Who's Your Daddy thing, but yeah, tone it down a little bit there, Rob Thomas, 11 years ago. Or 12 years ago, probably.
2004 was 11 years ago.
Well, you mightn't have written it in 2004.
Oh, yeah, that's actually true.
So, might have been 2003 when you wrote it.
Yeah. It does take time to make TV.
Or earlier. He was trying to write a novel at one point based on this character. So, what this actually shows about is Veronica clearly... Like with Cliff, she has connections in the adult world.
Yeah.
I don't mean in the Seven Veil adult world. I mean in the human, not human, serious adult world.
Yeah.
To say human adult world means that like...
She has grown-ups who are friends with her and they're willing to do things for her.
Yeah. To say human adult world, it makes it sound like, you know, the big strippers in Neptune are aliens or something.
It's not that kind of mystery.
No, it's not like Gravity Falls, which I'm sure doesn't have super aliens in it either, but you never know.
No, Gravity Falls totally has aliens in it. Gravity Falls has all the conspiracy theories in it.
But not stripper aliens.
Well, no, it's a kid show.
I mean, it could.
If there is a conspiracy, though, about stripper aliens, maybe they'll work it into season 3.
I must catch up on that show. Back to this though. Veronica also runs the plates on the car because she obviously still has the photographs with the things, and
she took them. She has the camera.
She does an impersonation of Inga, the duty officer from the police station, and finds out that the car belongs to her mother. Act break. At this point, if we were a real podcast, we'd have an ad right now.
Yeah. Let's put one in anyway. This podcast is brought to you by laundry. Laundry. It's the first thing Alan saw when he was looking around his bedroom. Do yours today.
Use the promo code SOCK nowhere to get extra socks to launder. Possibly some detergent. Although they found out from a hotel room, bathroom yesterday, that detergent is the number one cause of the environment's problems.
That's not great for the water supply.
No, but as the ad said, you gotta, you know, make up your own mind. You know, please make... Oh, what was the exact quote? It was...
something like, you decide.
It was, please decide for yourself. Yes. Towels in the bathtub means please replace them. Towels hung up means I will use them again. Thank you. Use the promo code TOWELS at that hotel I stayed in to get...
Well, towels.
More towels?
Yes.
Maybe?
To get your towels laundered. stupid lazy hotel.
Yes, the lazy hotel. We've recorded 2 hours for this podcast now.
We're getting into Dear Hank and John territory.
Oh no, Alan died.
That's okay. I just wildly gesticulated and knocked over a can of vanilla Coke. The can was empty.
This podcast is brought to you by Vanilla Coke, the thing Alan just drank.
Vanilla Coke. It should be available everywhere, but it isn't.
Meanwhile, Keith Mars has been in his house or apartment or was the office? Was their house?
It's in the office.
In the office. Keith's in the office. Veronica's asking him about the case. And he tells her fibs.
Yeah, he says that it's just industrial espionage and it's nothing to do with what they were hired to look into. So he's dropping the case.
And then we get the flashback to the bit that makes Lam out to be even worse than he was.
Yeah, he is an absolute asshole in this. Yeah, I keep saying that word a lot. I need better descriptions. I'm not good at swearing, podcast listeners.
It's a good thing we've got an explicit thing. Thanks to D. Amanda Hagen. That was a heavy swearing episode. Veronica goes to the... we get a flashback to her going straight to the sheriff's office the morning after her rape and going into Sheriff Lam, who just basically dismisses her because she's like, what do you want me to do? Arrest all of the rich white people, essentially, is what he's saying.
Yeah.
And tells her to go see the wizard. And he is absolutely despicable in this moment.
Yep.
It's so smug and smarmy and...
This is what happens when you elect your local police.
Yeah. You get terrible people.
Yeah.
But we then get Veronica going back to the courthouse back to the normal timeline. Veronica goes to the sheriff's office, into the courtroom, and when Cliff is playing the video of the Loretta Cancun trial.
No, it's the trial of the two guys from the...
Oh, the trial of the two guys from the...
From the biker gang.
The biker gang. We get shots from outside the Seven Veil of people of sheriff's department officers leaving the strip club with strippers in a police car.
So they must be on duty, right?
Yes. And this gets the case dismissed.
Well, yeah. They've no evidence.
And
Cliff moves for a dismissal of the Loretta Cancun case as well. Two birds, one stone. Cliff is great.
Yes. And back to the... And then we go back to the beach where Veronica gives Wallace the tape. The actual surveillance tape, and then find that as Wallace and Veronica are playing with the remote control airplane, Logan appears and is sitting on Veronica's car with a crowbar, and he is annoyed at her because
Daddy took his T-Bird away.
Yes, he just. I love that. I actually really like that whole thing. He's talks about how he does the whole. My daddy took the T-Bird away and now I can't have fun line. Obviously much cooler than that. But it's really... Logan is... Like, he's a real heel.
Logan spends a lot of time thinking up how can I best be a heel in this situation.
Yeah.
He was rehearsing that all the way there.
He's charming, but he's, like... You hate him. Mm. You like. He's a kind of character, literally, you like to hate because he's just so. I always think of a thing he says later on in the series to He runs into Allison Hannigan plays his older sister, and Chris McCarpenter plays I think she's basically his dad's mistress. And he walks into the room where they're both talking, and he comes into the room and he says, "Hey, look, it's Road Hard and Put Away Wet." He's so, you know, blatantly goes around being an absolute tool.
I like to imagine that he has a notebook filled with insults. He spends time every day trying to come up with references to describe his friends and enemies.
I much rather think that it's all off the cuff. That he's just that. But here he's taking a crowbar to Veronica's car until he is rested, until we get what actually becomes a long-standing sort of thing between Weevil and Logan. They never like each other in the series, and Weevil confronts Logan, and because Veronica helped out VCH, so they're on her side, and Logan gets a couple of punches to one to the gut and one to the face, sort of like the nose,
to incentivize him to apologize,
which he refuses to do. But before anything else can happen, Veronica calls it off and doesn't give Weevil the tape. Wallace keeps the tape.
It might come in handy.
Then we find out Veronica. This show again. That's the two real. That's the plot of the episode. The two main kind of plots of the episode wrapped up, and then we get the postscript. You know, the post that post plot stuff, where we have Veronica checks her dad's files, finds that he's still keeping stuff on the Lily Kane murder case, because she also knows that her mother was staying at the Camelot with Jake Kane. She checks on she we end the show with her checking, knocking on that door at the Camelot to see if her mother is there. And it's really done so really well in this. You think when she's talking to Keith about, you know, he wants to go watch a movie and whatever, and she's like, she has to go do something first, and the music box is on the desk, and it goes from it's doing that thing, you know, where you have the music in the scene, the diegetic music in the scene is the music that we're hearing, the audience are hearing, which is always a nice little bit.
Yeah, and it cuts to being non-diegetic then with the rest of it. It's playing over Veronica as she drives and as she goes to the Camelot Motel. It's a nice little music box version of All You Need Is Love.
Look at us throwing out diegesis.
Yeah.
And you know, talking about shot construction. This is like this
I could
is
have
like
studied some, film theory.
I did kind of study film theory, like a little bit. That's how, and I studied literature and a bit of film theory, so I know all the words sometimes when I remember them. But that's Veronica Mars, the first episode of Veronica Mars, which did run for 3 seasons, 2.5 of which are good by my reckoning, until the CW kept tooling around with it and ruined it. And caused it to, and cancelled it, and it went away.
It wasn't DLC enough for them.
Yes, and it went away until Kickstarter brought us a movie, which I still haven't seen.
The movie is worth watching. Yeah, I do, however, recommend not having a big load of Coke beforehand, like Coca-Cola, not. Maybe you should have some cocaine. It might make you, it might loosen you up a little. But
Alan's just full on 1980s businessman. He's that guy at the start of that 80s show.
Yeah, just like doing coke, talking about how much I like coke. I had a large Coca-Cola at the cinema, and really needed to go to the toilet just as the plot was being resolved.
Yeah,
so that was unfortunate. I had to choose between my bladder and the reveal. I chose my bladder.
At BroCon, I went, after you and Owen went home, I, myself, DeCork, and Amanda Hagen went to see Terminator Genesis with the view of doing a backseat critique, one of her backseat critique videos on it, but we never did because of the taxi never arrived in time to bring us back to the University of Limerick. But yeah, for about the last 20 minutes or so of Terminator Genesis, I really had to pee because I had drank an entire thing of also Coke, I think, or Sprite, I can't remember. But I remember we leave the cinema and we're going outside, and the man was like, "The bathroom's just down there," and I'm like, "Thank you," and I just darted down. I just darted down to the bathroom.
This podcast is brought to you by Cinema Theatre Drinks. Cinema Theatre Drinks. You probably shouldn't drink all of them.
But I will. We were actually recording an episode of the series the day the Kickstarter for Veronica Mars was launched.
Yeah.
And we should go.
Yeah, I had it on my phone the whole time, just looking at the numbers continually going up and up. It was amazing.
Yeah, I don't remember what episode that was, but When did the Kickstarter happen? Tell me the time, I might be able to guess.
The Kickstarter was March 13th, 2013.
March 2013. I'm going to... Chaplin, Ed Wood, something like that?
It might have been Chaplin, actually. Hmm. I have a feeling it was Chaplin.
This podcast is brought to you by nearly 3-year-old videos that we made. Go watch Chaplin. It's actually quite good script. That one, good movie too. With Nala from The Lion King in it, like not the actual lion.
The person who voiced the lion.
The person who voiced the lion. Yes. And her boobs are in that too, but I blurred them out with them. Steve Mel Gibson's face. Was a joke in that one. This is all vamping because I'm waiting for Open Office to actually open the rankings because it was being really slow. Behind the scenes at pilot season. Opening of ODT files. This podcast is brought to you by Apache Open Office, the thing you use when you don't want to buy Microsoft Office.
See, I use Evernote, so...
That other thing you use when you don't want to buy Microsoft Office.
Although Evernote really wants you to buy premium. Like, every time you open it.
It's the WinRAR of its field.
I should probably pay for WinRAR at some point. I do use it. I feel guilty about it.
Use the promo code NEVER. When not paying for WinRAR. They're so trusting. They're the most trusting company in all of humanity. So this show, this Veronica Mars show.
Yeah. It was fun.
I think it's gonna go pretty high up on the list.
Yeah. Let's have a look at the top of the list there, Patrick.
Top of the list, Alan, is we go top five. The top five is Adventure Time, which I've been rewatching recently because it's back, and this time it's Marceline heavy. 4, The Amazing Screw-On Head, which he's a screw-on head. He's amazing. David Hyde Pierce is in it. 3 is Heat Vision and Jack, which is the true number one of this podcast.
It's number 1. 2
is Man in the High Castle. Yes. 2 is A Man in the High Castle, which should be series-ing
soon, if not already.
And Number one is The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, which is, I think, one of our most popular episodes.
Well, people love Kimmy Schmidt, and they love to hear people
they
talk
do.
About it.
And Veronica Mars.
Also, Rog was a
where
guest
we
on
put...
that, so we've got the Rog audience.
Oh, yeah, the Rog...
He's a big draw.
Rogerians. Yeah, they love Rog out there in podcast land. okay, so... Pilot, no, not ranking where pilot season goes in the pilot season list of rankings. That'd be weird. Besides, we obviously know where that goes, and that's
at the top
below Hot 100. I think below Hot 100. Yeah,
no, no, this is humanity's greatest achievement. You're listening to right now, listeners.
That's a great name for a podcast.
Humanity's greatest achievement.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Patent pending. I'll get onto Earwolf in the morning.
As an aside, The Man in the High Castle actually all 10 episodes are going to be released November 20th, the same day Jessica Jones comes out. So if you like binge watching, guys, November 20th is the day to binge watch.
So Veronica Mars, then I've preemptively moved Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt down to
two.
That's telling you where I'm going.
That's presumptuous.
While you were talking, I just scrolled up and then hit enter. I'm like, well, I've already done it. I'm laying down my cards here.
Okay, let's have this discussion then.
Okay.
So, what has Veronica Mars got over Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt?
Well, the pilot is incredibly tightly written.
This is true, but Kimmy Schmidt also has that in its favor.
It has multiple threads going on.
Yes.
It establishes an entire world in 40 minutes, introducing us to...
That is something that it has over Kimmy Schmidt, because Kimmy Schmidt basically establishes that it's in New York.
Yes.
And New York is a place that you can use as a shorthand. It's New York.
Mm. And it's got, you know, some really charming character actors really doing some really cool stuff. And it's, you know, it's beautifully shot, Alan.
These are all totally acceptable points, Patrick.
Kimmy Schmidt shot like a sitcom. Veronica Mars shot like a, you know, like it's noir.
Yeah.
Like nice muted tones and a nice little like cool little camera, dolly shots, I think, and some nice overhead stuff, and it's like, oh, so pretty.
Kimmy Schmidt doesn't break from the sitcom direction too much. There is that shot at the end in Times Square, but that's the break.
Correction, I don't think they're dolly shots I'm thinking of. But, you know, lots of moving cameras and
yeah, that's a dolly shot.
No, a dolly shot is a dolly... No, it's not really a... It's more of a pan. What kind of shots I'm thinking of? Dolly is when the camera actually moves.
The dolly is when the camera is on a train track.
Or wheels, because I'm going to buy one. No, the shot I'm thinking of where it's in Keith's office and the camera just sort of pans and kind of goes. I think it might track a little bit inwards as well, but it's a really cool little shot. It's just so... There's some cool shots in it.
Yeah, there's great production going into this.
Great framing. And
there's a great plot. It establishes all the characters very, very well.
Main and playing
you get
side characters.
Weevil's character, for example, is fairly well established. That he's the head of a biker gang. He's a lot of a jerk, but he's also semi reasonable in that you help him out, he'll help you out. Yeah. He's a complicated character.
Think of the characters that are established. There's Weevil, there's Veronica, Keith, Logan. We get some of... We don't really see Duncan, but we get some of Duncan.
Yeah, the Miss Kane gets...
Miss Kane.
Gets a bit... Sheriff Lamb.
Sheriff Lamb. Wallace.
A small brush of a principal.
The principal gets a little bit of a thing, yeah. We get introduced to, you know...
I'm not entirely sure about Wallace.
World.
Wallace doesn't get a lot.
Well, we get... I guess Wallace is somewhat... I suppose not, but we get... You know, that's 10, not 10, it's like 5, 6 characters that we get introduced to. Not to mention that nearly every character that was mentioned in that... In this podcast... comes up again and has some sort of part to play in the ongoing series.
That's
and some
very
of
true,
them
yeah.
Are in the story.
It's incredibly well done, all of this. I think you've convinced me, Patrick. I think
I convinced you?
Yeah, I think this goes up at the top.
Also, you know, I'm a little bit more fond of We Used to Be Friends than the Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt theme.
That's where we disagree, Patrick. The Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt theme is flawless.
I like it, but you know, watching the pre-credit sequence and then getting long time ago we used to be friends thing popping up, it was like, oh, I've missed this.
I mean, it totally fits the show.
It's perfect for the
show. It's a brilliant choice. If we're putting this at the top, everything has to be pretty good, right?
Yeah, this is one hell of an introduction to us.
It's a great example of a pilot.
It's a great example of a show for 2.5
Yeah, it's not just a good story. It also sets up a TV show, which is what you want out of a pilot.
Exactly.
You want to incentivize people to tune in again, and the best way to do that is for a show like this. Definitely is to have your overarching plot and also make your characters likable enough that people want to find out both what your mystery is and what happens to your characters. And Veronica Mars does both of those things.
And I feel like Veronica Mars did get a bit of a bad rep almost for being like people thought it was. You know, just some teen mystery Nancy Drew type thing.
Yeah, that's the other thing. If Veronica Mars could very easily have been that. It could have been your Sweet Valley High style solving crappy little high school mysteries like who sent me this love note or whatever. But it doesn't. It's just because it's for a teen audience doesn't mean it has to be crap. And Veronica Mars is a really good example of how to do it right.
Exactly.
The best way to make TV for a teen audience is to make good TV.
And it is good TV. Stephen King was a fan.
That's high praise.
Yes. The back of the box actually has a quote from USA Today that said, "It was one of the season's best new shows with one of its most delightful new heroines." Kevin Smith was also a fan. Kevin Smith directed an episode and was in one. There's a lot of people who I remember were big fans of Veronica Mars. I can't remember off the top of my head.
I think James Franco was. He's in the movie. I'm not sure if that's...
Wikipedia will tell.
I'm not sure if that's a ringing endorsement. James Franco is... James Franco.
Joss Whedon called it best show ever. Kevin Smith was in the episode Driver's Ed. Said it was a hands down the best television show right now. Stephen King said it was Nancy Drew meets Philip Marlowe. And the rest is pure nitro. Why is Veronica Mars so good? It bears a resemblance to life as we know it, but I can't take my eyes off the damn thing. Ed Brubaker called it the best mystery show ever made in America.
Ooh, Ed Brubaker. Nice. Ed Brubaker's a really, really good comic writer, and he knows crime drama. He has some fantastic Image comics, Criminal, for example. And also, he is behind one of the best runs on Iron Fist, coming eventually to Netflix.
So, you know, there's a lot of lot of heavy hitters behind praising Veronica Mars. It was a critical success. Yeah. And it's top of our list now. Suck it.
We can't help but side with all these much, much smarter, better writers than us.
I was going to say, suck it, Man in the High Castle. That was the one number one I really didn't agree with. And I'm glad it's gone down to number three. I didn't think it was bad, I just didn't think it was number one worthy.
There we are.
There we are. Now it's dead. Forever. Notes.
I still quite like Man in the High Castle. I agree with our two choices ahead of it.
Hmm.
Could be swayed into moving Heat Vision and Jack above it as well. but no, that it's set in stone now. And also, I don't want Hagen to come after me. She's scary.
She will come after you.
I know.
Because that's what she does.
I'm worried already that we have two things higher than the things she really liked.
Maybe next week we could have a new number one, Alan. Who knows?
Well,
it's a competitive podcast.
I'm not entirely sure if it'll happen next week because next week we're doing something fascinating.
Yes, we're going to look at another detective show, 1993's South of Sunset, starring musician Glenn Frey of The Heat Is On and I Was in the Eagles fame. Yes, I Was in the Eagles is a thing Glenn Frey would say because he was in the Eagles. Or is it? No, it's not really the Eagles. It's just Eagles. I forgot. There's no de. But it's something I didn't know until very recently. That they're just Eagles.
But even then, the Wikipedia article starts with the Eagles.
Yeah, but you notice Eagles is in bold, indicating it is the actual name of the band. But South of Sunset was a detective series with Glenn Frey. Where Glenn Frey is a detective, and that's next week's show. This one had only one ever episode that aired. So...
What did
Yeah, it only aired one episode.
They did... No. There's an episode list there of seven episodes. Two of which are aired.
Says in the opening thing that it only aired one episode. It aired one episode on CBS. And,
some of them aired later somewhere else.
But, yes. And was cancelled much to Fry's chagrin.
Oh, there it is. VH1 later re-aired the pilot and four more episodes.
Hold on, this is next podcast stuff.
We're wasting all our best material right now.
We're getting ahead of ourselves. But tune in next week for some hot is on action. Eagle. Like a Hotel California. Take it easy. I'm Patrick Brogan. And if you want to find me, make Eagles references on podcasts, I'm going to find one that I can do again. I've already said Hotel California. Haven't
you
I?
Haven't
yes,
done
I have.
Heartache Tonight.
Oh. Well, if you're a Johnny Come Lately, you can find me at theunemployedhistorian.com and youtube.com/ I think The Unemployed Historian or on nerdvice.com
and rtdglover.com.
If you're that too, if you're if you've got some lion eyes and you want to take it
to the limit?
To the limit, you witchy woman. Maybe you ought to tell Alan Byrne, or Alan Byrne could tell you how you desperados could go find him on the internet. This is the worst thing in the world, I'm saying.
It's all staying in. You can find me on Twitter, where my name is Alan Byrne, usefully enough. That's spelled A-L-A-N-B-E-I-R-N-E. I'm also on Tumblr, that's alanbyrne.tumblr.com, or my website, albyrne.com. Although that stopped hanging out with the popular websites and started just going around snooping on people with a taser. It's kind of scary.
That's been another episode of Pilot Season. I'm getting in my old 55 to make up for some wasted time, because I can't tell you why, but there's been a heartache tonight, and I'm expecting a tequila sunrise, but I'm going to try and love again and give the best of my love to all of you next week on another Pilot Season. Goodbye, Alan Byrne. I'm already gone.
Desperado!